This is Program PM on KYW Westinghouse Radio in Cleveland, Ohio. Speaking of ufology, unidentified flying objects or flying saucers. And tonight, many things to check off down the list and talk about with our UFO investigators, Bob Grove and Earl Neff. Now, let me just give you a little rundown of what's to come in weeks to come here on Program PM's UFO Roundtable. Professor Charles Meany, an astronomy and mathematics professor at Defiance College, will be our guest next week, January 17th. On the following week, January 24th, Mr. Wesley Fitch, who is Earl and Bob tell me, has one of the largest collection of UFO material known. And the following week after that, I hope to invite from the Cleveland UFO Society, Mr. Lawrence Blasey. So we've got some interesting guests coming up, and tonight we'd like to have, among other things, you as our guest. The phones are going to be used tonight. We haven't answered enough phone questions in the last couple of weeks. The number is 241-5637. Now, we'll be taking those calls. You can be calling now if you like and reserving your place on the line, but we'd like to talk to Bob and Earl about a few things first to kind of set the groundwork. Bob, you were here early and had a chance to go through the mail, and boy, it was a lot this week. And, you know, like, please keep it coming. Just send it right here to KYW. Find anything particularly interesting that needs answering, Bob?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I sure would hate to have the job of weeding through it and finding out what was more interesting than the others. I found all of it absolutely fascinating. One letter, which I tried to get to last week on the air and didn't get a chance to, was a statement which wound up by Dave Barrow from the Spelunkers Associated in Bowdoin, Georgia. They listen every week to us.
Spelunkers or Cave Explorers?
Cave Explorers,
yeah.
Right. Fascinating enterprise. And I understand from the text of their letter, that isn't the only thing they're interested in. They're interested in this type of thing, too. They finally wind up in the letter by saying something that really has a lot of truth to it. Just being teens makes us very anxious to help clear up the UFO mystery, and nobody appreciates that more than a high school teacher, believe me.
Pardon me, Bob, but you don't suppose that the being spelunkers, they'd be interested in the Shaver mystery. That's down below the ground, you know.
Oh, yes, that's right. So
Shaver.
It is.
We'll have to get into that one of these.
Yeah,
well,
somebody called about the other night asking.
Mm-hmm. So far as other letters that came up, Barry Foster from Akron would like to have a list of books and magazines available. Bruce Klobecki and David Lake. So for these gentlemen, the publications that I heartily recommend, one of the newest ones is called The Great Flying Saucer Hoax. And this has been out now for about a year, written by Coral Lorenzen. L-O-R-E-N-Z-E-N, Coral Lorenzen, who has the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization from Tucson, Arizona. Another one, E.J. Ruppelt, R-U-P-P-E-L-T, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. And any of the Donald Kehoe productions on paper are very good. So far as magazines that are out, this is kind of rough, but Flying Saucers by Ray Palmer is probably the number one publication on a large scale in magazines. The APRO Bulletin and the NICAP Investigator, which are respectively Lorenzen's and Kehoe's bulletins, are also excellent sources of new material on UFO investigation. A very fine letter, I might say, from Kenneth Parrington, from Romeo, Michigan, regarding his reports and theories, and thank you very much. It made very interesting reading.
This was a fellow who works for one of the motor companies.
Right,
up there. Yeah.
Right. He is a test driver for one of the motor companies up at Romeo, near Romeo, Michigan, and he has made some very fascinating discoveries for himself so far as the UFO phenomena are concerned.
I just wonder, Bob, now he outlined in that long letter that he wrote some very interesting flying saucer that he observed, and he says that half of the plant
At the ship the where he
ship,
worked.
Yes,
was.
That's right. Can
have
verify
you heard
it.
About that one before?
No, that one had never come by. This is one of these that a whole number of people will see, and then it never makes the papers. Mainly, and I'll tell you another thing that we can bring in immediately at this point I wanted to bring in. The term that crops up so often in these letters, please don't use my name on the air.
Why is that?
That is a very interesting thing, and I think it's because of some of the, well, not disrespect, but tongue-in-cheek attitudes that have been taken on by a number of people who have talked to people that perhaps are very credulous or perhaps lead the UFO investigation on into something of the realm of the complete supernatural and leave objectivity. This is an unfortunate black eye that sometimes arrives for the UFO's sincere investigation. And I think it's really a shame that this sort of thing does happen, but some people are really afraid to associate, although they want to know all they can.
The struggle of conformity.
Yes, the struggle of conformity. It's an unfortunate sort of thing that has interposed on this. I want also, if I might, to thank a clarification letter that came from an ex-Army man whom I referred to on the air that turned out to be an ex-Army woman. So thank you, ma'am, for writing this letter of clarification.
Viva la défense.
I guess. Joe and Jerry from Lorraine, thanks very much, and don't apologize for your writing. It was no trouble reading it, and your citing was very, very interesting. And by the way, both of them did a very good job in describing an object the way it should be described, as a familiar object held at arm's length. Now, they said a dime at a six-foot distance. This, of course, is a very long arm, but in any case, it does give a perspective on the object that was seen, and I want to thank them for it. So far as Bruce Klebecki, you were interested for your tape recordings there and where you can get things that I said you can detect UFOs with. Transducers are difficult to come by, but can be bought from special electronics outlets. Cartwright detectors are basically big compasses which have to be built. For UFO pictures, flying saucer magazines, and then check very carefully on the sources from these magazines. One other thing before we go in, there was a two tonight's phone calls, which I see are already on the line. We had a call just after the program last week, and I want to get in touch with the gentleman again. Bob Nowak, I hope you're listening tonight. He's a college student, and he has two letters from the Air Force, one completely denying the existence of UFOs, and the other one classifying UFO investigation as top secret. I think these are both very interesting, and we'll delve into that at a future date on the program.
In fact, I'd like to talk to Bob on the air on one of our broadcast phone calls one of these days. Now, we will get to those phone calls in just a moment. First, let me ask you, Earl. You're involved a good deal, are you not, with giving lectures. Now, what do you try to present at, when you give a lecture for an organization?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, Harv. Well, I try to make every lecture different because of the age bracket, for instance, of the audience, or their knowledge of the subject. I always check with the chairman or the program director as to how much the people really know about the subject or what phase of the UFO picture they'd like to hear about. And I would like to say this, that I never make a charge for myself, but I do ask that a check be sent to either NICAP or APRO. They are both, as you know, nonprofit groups. And for that reason, for the amount of time I spend to prepare for a lecture, I feel that it's worth the trouble to have them send the check to those organizations, or either one.
Aside from the help this gives the organization, it also serves to announce to one and all that you are not in this for the money.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
As an interest. Let's get to a couple of the... by the way, now, for those lectures, you can just drop a card here to Earl Neff, Program PM, KYW, Cleveland, and we'll be glad to hold them for Earl if you'd like to have him visit with your group. Let's take a call now, and we'll get back and talk with Bob and Earl some more after they answer some questions. Put them to work first, okay? What's your question, please? Or is it a question, in fact? Mm-hmm. Go ahead. How long do we think UFOs have been around, not just to our knowledge, but in general, maybe even going beyond what we actually know, and either Bob or Earl might have an opinion on how far they go back. Let's find out. Earl, what do you think?
Well, there is a subject for a great discussion. Desmond Leslie would tell you in many, many digits how many, many years ago the first one was seen, going back maybe a million years and some. But so far as the general public is concerned, today we go back to 1947 when Kenneth Arnold saw them. Yet the Maury Island case that took place a little before Kenneth Arnold called them flying saucers, it was just a matter of a very few days, relatively, before the famous sighting of Arnold. But actually, these objects have been coming here for many, many, many years. And it is nothing new, only that it has received greater publicity of recent years.
Well, based on the information that you have now, gathered from all sources, just in your own opinion, when is the date that you would fix as to saying, to my own satisfaction, this is when they probably started coming?
Well, before the days of Christ.
That long?
Yes. And we've only been off the ground for a relatively few years when the Wrights got us off. And this is not off the ground I'm speaking now. I'm speaking of interplanetary travel that has happened. So that's the reason why it's always interesting to me when I pick up something where scientists are called men with closed minds, as I think this article that I handed you the other evening from Nick Nestor stated. It was written by Dr. Ivan Stevenson. And in there, it was very shocking to me to learn that it was actually 1903 when the scientists finally, and the astronomers, admitted that meteorites come not just from some volcanic eruption and blown by the wind, but actually come from outer space. Only 160 years ago. And prior to that...
I mean, they really thought they just went up and came down again.
Yes, they just couldn't believe that they were from the sky. I'd like to go into that maybe next week before we get our friend Professor Manion, because he is one of the men who does not have a closed mind.
All right, I'd like to read that during the course of this week.
Fine.
And then we can talk about it on the air before talking to
yes.
Professor Manion. Bob, what do you think about how long they've been
Well, I generally take the side or the attitude that much of the, biblical and pre-biblical and, of course, post-biblical writings were of a very subjective nature, and for this reason I am reluctant to accept everything that is in them without an interpretation. I shouldn't say I'm reluctant to accept everything in them, but I should say that there are some items in there which I think have to be interpreted, and we know that we're placed in there through interpretation, and for this reason, not knowing the exact perspective in which they were admitted to these works, not just the Bible but other works that went along with it, I feel that I generally find a little more comfort in accepting the Second World War on, reports from the First and Second World War on. In other words, the early 1900s.
The Foo Fighters?
Yeah, Foo Fighters on.
In other words, when you're speaking of the Bible, you're probably referring to like Ezekiel with a wheel within wheel.
Yes, that's right. Some people interpret that as a flying saucer. I interpret it a little more literally.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
You can interpret
exactly.
it many ways. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, okay, then that's it for you? I'm sure it does. Thank you for calling. Program PM, your question, please. You'd like to know if anyone has ever seen a flying saucer land. And that's all?
Oh, that's easy.
Well, I'm sure it's a yes, but let's find out how, why, and what. Earl?
Well, right back in our own general area, Olden Moor. The man we went into great detail about some weeks back, who not only saw it land, but then the following day, the Geiger counters showed that it had landed. The radioactivity...
It showed that something was there.
Yes,
right?
Microwrenchins were 20 times what they should have been under normal conditions. And there have been many landings. I don't mean by that I go along with contactees and the little green antennas and all that.
How many people saw this particular landing you're talking about?
Olden Moore alone.
Just one.
And he went home to get his wife, and when she came back, it was gone. Of course, he had a harder time than ever to explain then.
Which ones have you heard about, Bob?
Of course, Olden Moore is the one we always think about associated close here.
How long
was
that?
Olden Moore was a 58 or 56.
I
can look it up.
Somewhere recently.
Yeah, several years ago, late 50s. Of course, from a standpoint of landing, UFOs that have landed. There was one seen over a lake in South America, and this is written up in Coral Lorenzen's latest publication. This supposedly had disintegrated in the air, and she has something that looks like awfully good almost proof that this happened. And I suggest then refer them immediately to Coral Lorenzen's The Great Flying Saucer Hoax, referring the hoax, by the way, to the Air Force perpetration that she would suggest they are doing, saying they don't even exist.
Yeah, that's a misleading time.
Yes, it is.
Friday, November the 22nd, 1957, was when this article was printed in the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
That's about
and
the time you
this was
to
relative
mm-hmm.
to Olden Moore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it happened the day before.
Okay, so apparently there have been plenty of sightings. Okay. and landing. Thank you for calling. I wish I could think of the one I mentioned this several weeks ago when we on the show. This famous West Virginia. And I meant to ask Bob or Earl, if we check into that for me. It's something monster.
Oh, the monster.
Oh.
I'll tell you
the
what.
The Bluefield monster,
yes.
Or the something monster. Do you remember?
I know that story well.
Because I heard this, I was just listening with slack jaw when I first heard it, you know?
Well, a school teacher and her children were going up on this knoll, and incidentally, when we have C. Wesley Fitch here, he has covered that ground thoroughly and can tell you to the minutest detail, time permitting, of all about it. But quickly, it was a case where this school teacher and a few of her pupils went over this little hill or knoll, and on the other side was this object right down there on the ground. And they were very frightened because this creature that they saw in the other direction then was coming toward them. And
they saw two.
Yes, the one was the monster, and the other was the apparently a ship. But UFO.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic thing, and it did leave an awful odor there. And this is quite frequently true where they are so close. There is a putrid odor. Of course, many immediately debunked this.
From the UFO or from the animal?
Well, we don't know if it's the, like with angel hair, you get the ionized air and so forth, if it's that that's causing it, what it is. But I have a strong suspicion that when anybody sees something like this and they're so startled that the eyes might look like they were headlights when they maybe are just the size of a little flashlight. So I think there is a certain amount of exaggeration perhaps there.
One of the things that stuck with me about that monster story, that I wish I could think of the name of it, was that I heard that they analyzed some ground the next day and they found a chemical or a something or some product that they didn't, they'd never heard of before. Do you remember that phase of it?
I don't recall
they
that particular
this,
phase
this
of it. You're not confusing this, are you, with the Florida case where the Boy Scout leader had quite an experience? Mm-hmm. It's quite.
No, this was. West Virginia, because
the Florida case,
as it happens,
yeah.
And I read about this a number of years ago, but as it happens, when I read about that in the paper, this Florida scoutmaster had been my scoutmaster.
Really?
He was from West Palm Beach.
Is that right?
Remember? West Palm Beach. He was my scoutmaster when I was down there. And at the time, I said, well, yeah, he always was kind of a...
But the ground was sadly burnt, you know.
Before I met you fellows.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for calling. Program PM, your question, please. If there is life on other planets, do we think it would be life as we know it around us today, right, Bob?
Well, I suppose this would be more or less referred to me in as much as I do teach space science. Now, from the standpoint of life as we know it, of course, this is based on the chemical processes which we as humans or we as earthbound life exhibit. We would again have to conjecture in this because we, quite truthfully, no scientist knows. But because no scientist knows, we're making definite strides forward in doing research on this, original research. We're setting up, for example, the huge radio telescopes constantly monitoring the very, very high frequency, 1420 megacycle wavelength for possible signals from outer space of an intelligent origin. Not only are we doing this, but of course our Mariner 2 space probe, which has just 2 weeks ago passed the planet Venus, is still, or I should say at the time, radioed by telemetry a tremendous amount of information back to our computers, which is constantly now being extracted for information to be released to the public.
But no people yet.
No people yet. That's right.
How would this, though, tie in? I heard something. What was it, Tom? I think one of our engineers around here said that, let me check it out, that there is no possibility of any in chemical ingredients existing anywhere in the universe that do not exist and are not known right here on the Earth.
That's absolutely correct. Now, the reason for it is because in our present atomic concept, which scientists universally now do accept to in more or less, of course, degrees, any of them will say that if you take one proton and one electron, you get hydrogen and so on, building all the way up to uranium, which is the largest unstable atom which we can possibly have before it begins to break down to make two smaller type of elements or atoms.
And we suspect that the bonding force between these particles and these atoms is the same throughout the entire universe, that the subatomic particles are the same through the entire universe, and therefore chemicals which exist using these would necessarily have the same definite proportional laws of combination.
When was the last chemical ingredient discovered here on Earth?
Well, we have constantly been manufacturing new ones. We're not discovering new ones. Uranium and radium, for example, toward the beginning of the 1900s and just after 1900, we started to get in. Finally, the uranium and the radiums and so on began to fill in the gap that we had. And around 1900, a little later than that, we finally got some of the more recent radioactive materials. But there are 92 possible atoms, therefore elements, which exist in the Earth, and we suspect probably only the same 92 exist throughout the entire universe in a natural state, although artificially others can be made a little bit larger and more complex than these. But
probably,
we do that on Earth.
Probably at one time, and I hate to consume so much time on this, but it's something that I still wonder about. Probably at one time when they were 87 or 80 or 91.
They said that's it.
Maybe they
Brother,
said that's
no
all
more.
The, maybe somewhere there's a number 93 lurking somewhere
yes.
around, you know, that we don't know about.
Well, there's 103. But these were manufactured artificially on Earth. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Earl?
I just wanted to add this little tip here, as long as we're talking about students and so forth. I was talking only a few hours ago tonight with Leonard Chester of Parma, and he was telling me that his son, who attends Parma Junior High School, was telling him that they listen. Many of the students up there listen to this program, and they even discussed this in class the other day. So maybe these are some of the physicists with the open minds of the future.
We're becoming educational.
Well, that's all right. In physics, we talked about hypnotism today, so I don't
Did
see any
really?
Reason why you can't talk about UFO.
And one of your upcoming tests, I wish you would include some questions based on material on this show every Thursday night. That way, well...
You're giving away my final exam.
Helps the radio show. Let's see if we can get some quick questions on, some quick answers just in the few minutes of remaining time. What's your question, please? Have UFOs ever been monitored by a chasing or a pursuing plane?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And if so, under what circumstances, Earl?
Well, yes, the Shebago case is one of the famous ones, and I didn't bring the information with me tonight, but I was just furnished this past week. It's from an old Cleveland News a friend of mine gave me, and it tells how on radar they were tracing this for a long time, even when it wasn't visible to the eye. But many, many times on radar, they do get these blips, and they can trace them, and it's tangible information.
But planes have actually taken off in pursuit of these objects.
Oh, many times. Of course, the famous Thomas Mantell case, where he lost his life, was where he was getting closer and closer. And I was told a couple of years ago that the last statement he made to the radio officer on the ground, and I hope this is true, I have no way of absolutely proving it, was as he came closer and closer to the object, he said, "My God, there are people in it." And that was the last that was heard.
And then he died.
Yes.
Christ. Oh. All right. We gave a list of books earlier, and we'll probably be giving it in future weeks. We can't take the time right now. But if you would call back after the show is over, 241-5637, Earl and Bob, you always stick around and answer our questions that we don't get to on the air. That's 241-5637. For anybody else who'd like to call in after the show is over, if we didn't get to your question, we'll stick around and answer them off the air for you, okay? Thank you for calling. Program PM, your question. A few weeks ago, Earl mentioned that there had been a kidnapping. Yes? Before a group of people. If I'm not mistaken, this was in connection with Carl Lorenzen, and we never did get really the complete story, but we... Will, next time we talk to Carl, we'll get a complete story from the woman herself, okay?
The bulletin is not yet out.
Okay, then. All right, thank you for calling. You just keep listening. We'll have that story right here on the UFO Roundtable. He says, I sure will. Well, I'm sure glad for listeners like you, sir. Thank you for calling. Program PM, this is Ufology. What's your question, please? A little bit on the what? On the fictional side. Is it not possible that these UFOs are... that we are part of a galaxy and that they are from where? Another galaxy? Or from the same galaxy and And they've all mastered interplanetary communication and travel, and they are just down here checking on us as much as we look out in our chicken coops and check on our own property. Hmm? Well, let's find out what Bob thinks about that.
This, of course, is a very great possibility. We're, of course, assuming individually here. Generally, people, of course, every person visualizes all existence in terms of his own frame of reference as an individual. And this then makes it exceedingly difficult for this universal concept, which necessarily must be studied when we're thinking about intelligence in outer space. And it is very possible that we are not even in the middle, but maybe way behind in terms of technology from space and technology from existence of life throughout, scattered all through the universe.
Harv, I might suggest that he read the latest issue of Flying Saucer magazine, the American issue that you can pick up at any of the downtown stores or the bookstands. In there, there's quite an article on the relationship of Mars, when it's closest to us, when it's furthest away, its graph showing the most sightings. Also, he might check with Amy Michelle in the Straight Line Mystery.
Okay, thank you for calling. Very interesting question, and it always kind of brings to my mind and sort of spooks me in a way that after all these weeks, and I'm still fence rattling, not quite sure, but I keep hearkening back to the thought that not too many years ago, just not even 500 years ago, there were a great number of people right here on this earth situated in a body of land known as Eurasia that thought that they were the whole world, you know? And then we were sitting over here all the time where the Indians were. Well, that's the way it goes, and our time is up for tonight. That's the way it goes, too. And this time just seems to flip by. Earl Neff and Bob Grove, my thanks very much to both of you for joining me on Program PM. Our time has gone by. Tommy Griffith is chafing at the bit. Time for the Tom Griffith Show all night right here on KYW. Once again, right here at the same time next week, Ufology Roundtable, yours truly, Harv Morgan, and Earl Neff and Bob Grove. Next week, 10:30, UFOs.